This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy Talk Explode with Rick Remender, writer of Fear Agent, The Punisher, and X-Force.
Go! Explode!
Hey, welcome to another edition of iFanboy Talk Explode. My name is Ron Richards, and this time around we're joined by Rick Remender, one of our favorite writers of one of our favorite books, Fear Agent, which has its final arc starting up this July. So we talked to Rick about that, as well as his upcoming work for Marvel on X-Force, as well as what's been going on Punisher. We get an update on Last Days of American Crime, as well as answer some of your questions as polled on Twitter. It was a good time talking to Rick, so take a listen. All right, I'm here with Rick Remender, writer of many comic books. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, Ron. How you doing?
I'm doing well, doing very well. So a lot to talk about. It's been about 6 months or so since we last chatted. That was back in the winter times, and now we're here
in
summer. So it's good to hear from you.
Is it summer? I'm in Portland. I can't really tell.
Yeah,
but I'll take the word for it.
It's close. I'm in San Francisco, so it's just cold. So
right.
But anyway. So the reason why we wanted to get on the phone and talk to you is because lo and behold, a new Fear Agent arc seems to be coming out.
It seems to be,
yeah.
Yes.
So what's the story?
We've got the last arc, and we've been slowly putting it together over the last year and wanted to make sure that it wasn't rushed and that it got the time that it needed to be amazing, and I think that it is. I've just put the first couple two issues to bed, and I'm about to write the final issue. I'm incredibly happy with it. I think that it stays true to the initial outline that I wrote back in 2004 when we first started cooking this thing up, Tony Moore and I. And I think people will be satisfied with the end result. There's something nice about coming to the conclusion that you had initially intended to come to. And, you know, I feel like there's an integrity to ending the thing where we're ending it right now.
Now, is this, you're ending it, but is it the end of Fear Agent? Like, do you think someday you'll come back to it? Or is this more like a pause? Or is it done, you're walking away?
Well, it's actually a 5-issue arc, and we've made sure that each issue is 32 full pages of comic book.
Oh, wow, so that's even more. That's great. Awesome.
It's 22 pages of main story and an 8-page backup, and then a couple pages of various sketchbook and pinup things. So we wanted to make sure that what we put out was, you know, for all the people who have stuck with us and made the book a hit and enabled us to keep doing it for as long as we have. We wanted to make sure that it was packed full of all the goodness we could get in there, and also to make sure that the final chapter wasn't rushed and that it had plenty of time to breathe and everything had plenty of space to grow. But it does feel to me now that I'm writing the last issue, it does feel to me that it probably will be the end. I'd hate to say that it definitely absolutely is, because it's also kind of depressing while I'm writing it.
Right.
To inhabit Heath is a lot of fun, and it's a character that I identify with, and I can write. You know, it's very natural, and it's a pleasurable experience for me. So, doing this final five issues has been tremendous in that we get to do the final story, and that there's been enough support of it in this market to get a creator-owned book up to issue 32, 33 when we're going to wrap it up. I feel really proud of the accomplishment in of itself, but getting there, it's bittersweet. It's nice to be there, but it's also very sad to sort of be telling what will very likely be the last Fear Agent story.
All right. So how is the art duty shaking out on the issues? Is Tony and Jerome trading off, or Tony just doing it, Jerome just doing it?
Jerome is busy on X-Force and won't be involved in this, unfortunately. So the way we've broken it down is we've got Mike Hawthorne doing rough pencils, and then Tony's coming in and doing an ink pass, and then John Lucas is doing finishes on everything else. So it looks spectacular. You've got three really talented guys handing the pages back and forth, and it's gorgeous. So, nobody looks at a page for so long that they start sort of moving through things quickly. Everybody has the page for just enough time that they can give it all the love they've got. And then Lee Lowridge is coming back and he's coloring it. And the pages are just spectacular. I couldn't be happier with the art. It definitely holds up to everything else we've done. With that's always been sort of the thing with Fear Agent, is we wanted it to be the thing where, creatively for our new nerd juices, if we were to be hit by a collective bus, say a double-decker bus, catches into us. I'm going to start going into Smith's lyrics.
You don't want to get me started either, please.
but the idea behind Fear Agent was like, look, it's something that's ours, and we're going to drench it with love, and Tony and Jerome and Hawthorne and, Kieran Dwyer helped out for a little while. All the guys who have been involved in drawing the book have always given it 100%, and Lowridge has as well. I mean, I think it's pretty much his defining moment of his career in terms of the kind of color work he's done, and Michelle Madsen, the work she did over Jerome as well, and Russ Wooten as well, the letterer, has just I noticed that when the pages are finally lettered, Russ's stamp and his style, the style he's chosen to letter this thing in, really makes it look like a Fear Agent page. So it's been a love letter to the EC stuff that we're big fans of, but it's also been sort of, it was very important that not one page get rushed and not one issue feel like, the shipping schedule shows that we've sort of put the quality of the book ahead of, getting it out on a regular basis. And it hurts you in the short term, but I really do think once we have an omnibus collection put out and, you've got all 32 issues in one hardcover collection and every single page is as perfect as we could have made it, it'll be nice. It'll stand as sort of a testament to the the will we had to make something memorable out of a science fiction property.
And I think that's totally the case. I mean, going back to the first, the earliest issues to how they are now, you could just see, not that the earliest issues were bad, but the level of quality and care seems to have been turned up with each issue. Like, it just looked a little nicer and just all came together a little bit, a little tighter. So it's been very
cool. The guys are sort of developing along the way, and I think my writing as well, I think it's also a really nice sort of, looking back to the first issue that I wrote in 2005 versus what I'm writing now in 2010, I've been putting out four or five books a month every month consistently since. So that's like I've written 5,000 or 6,000 pages in that time. I still, there's stuff that I cringe at. Tony and I were laughing because there's some drawings he wanted to fix in the first couple issues, and I wanted to change some dialogue. And we're like, what are we, George Lucas? No. It's a journey, and some of that stuff is a little bit clunky, but the heart is still there, and it's still a real pleasurable experience when people read it. But in terms of what the guys have done artistically, it is interesting to see as they progressed and as Tony and Jerome got better and better month after month, and hopefully I did as well. That they were also kind of challenging one another to keep the bar high, and it has consistently gotten better. I think that as you read the series, and it pulls you in, that you also get to experience watching two of the best artists working, kind of evolve.
Yeah. Very cool. So, so I should also mention that we kind of asked the Twitterverse to some questions that people wanted to have answered. We're gonna get that later on in the show. But one of the question that came up the most was, will there be an omnibus? I think everybody, and you referred to it earlier. So, is that confirmation that there will be a Fury Agent omnibus?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've already.
Had, I know, but to reiterate it.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've been talking about it with Dark Horse for forever, and once this is, you know, obviously it's a ways off because we want to make sure that the retailers who order this, you know, the singles have plenty of time to sell them, and the retailers who have trades on hand have plenty of time to sell them. And I don't necessarily think that omnibuses kill trade sales, but I understand that, you know, they want there to be a little bit of a break between there. So, you know, we'll do the 5 issues, and then, you know, 6 months later, the trade comes out, and then I would guess another 6 months after that, we'll see an omnibus of all 32 issues. Whether or not it will have, you know, there's also Tales of the Fear Agent Volume 2 that'll be shipping at the same time as the out-of-step trade paperback. So at that point, we'll have 2 volumes of the Tales of the Fear Agent stuff. We might try and do a hardcover sort of companion that'll go with the omnibus, so you have everything in hardcover format. But I don't think that we would put the omnibus would be too big at that point. It would be coming in at, you know, giant sizes, which I know they can do. But for me, I think 32 issues is good, and then we'll do the tails in a separate one.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I gotta say, I mean, that's a good question as to whether or not omnibuses, you know, cut into trade sales or not. I don't think they do. In fact, a lot, you know, I don't think enough statistically enough people do this, but a lot of people get them all. You know, like the collector mentality still sets in. You know?
Right.
So maybe it helps. Right. But
I think there's different markets. You know, people who have heard about Fear Agent, and you know, the buzz has been tremendous. You know, over the years, it builds and builds, and thanks to you know, intelligent reviewers like yourself who you know, trust and hear good things about it from. But it's still like to pull the trigger on something, especially something that might look like kitschy science fiction that you're not sure that you're into, you know, and the majority of the modern comic book fans are not big you know, EC freaks like a lot of us older guys are. We sit back and just drool over Wally Wood pages, and you know, so I think that those people, you know, over time, as they've heard good things, when an omnibus is on the shelves and they know that this is the whole story, there's something very nice about the knowledge that there's no, you won't have to be the guys who, you know, waited for the next installment. In Fear Agent, we've always worked really hard, and I've, you know, worked very hard to try and make sure that every cliffhanger is, you know, exciting and enthralling and something where you really can't wait to see the solution to it. And it's part of the fun, but I know that because of the gap between issues, it's been frustrating for some people. And I think that the omnibus will, you know, draw in a whole different audience than the trades do. And, you know, and then people who hear good things about the omnibus but might not want to drop the money can always go buy the first trade. I just think it's different, you know. I think people will cross-pollinate a little bit.
Give them options. So, so to go back to the upcoming series, so you mentioned the title of this story arc is Out of Step, so I have to give you a little nod for ending up with one of my favorite hardcore bands reference.
Yeah.
Some people might not know about it. I know we talked about, I don't know if we talked about this actually on recorded or not, but all the titles of Fear Agent are references to hardcore songs, hardcore bands. Right.
Except for Hatchet Job, which is my favorite band that should have been hardcore, like, you know, the Hot Snakes. And I know they're not hardcore per se. It's so many amalgams of all these different things. But the Hot Snakes, to me, fit in that legendary band category. So when I was going through, I was like, you know what? I'm going to break rule on this one and go with the Hot Snakes on one title. But yeah, all the others are, you know, Bad Brains, Bad Religion, Agent Orange, and now Minor Threat.
Not a bad grouping to throw in there, and I put Hot Snakes in there.
Oh, not Bad Religion. I'm sorry, Black Flag.
Black Flag was in there. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But so cool. So Out of Step. So Fear Agent number 28. Out of Step. It's the first issue of the Out of Step arc. So where does the story pick up? Where if people are just jumping on, like, where can they expect with Heath's situation right now?
Well, it's you know, it's so complicated. I just got done writing the story so far, and it's like half a page because I wanted the people who did pick it up and hadn't read the book to get some sort of a background, but. Honestly, it's sort of like the people, I had some friends that were trying to watch The Wire season 5, and they just didn't get half of it. you know, they're like, why everybody says this is so brilliant, and I see the writing is sharp, but what is this? I'm like, well, because they're building on things that were seeded in other seasons, and the payoff that you're getting are really only going to work if you've read the whole thing. So the difficulty in Fear Agent at this point, given that we're in the last arc, is it really is structured as one big story. You can go back and read Volume 1 or Volume 3 as an introductory volume, I think. Obviously, I prefer people to start with 1 and move forward. I don't want to dissuade anyone from reading the book, obviously. But where we left off last time was sort of, an end point for so many of the arcs in the things that we had been sort of building into in the volumes in the previous volumes. We had you've got the Drezites, the major alien races in this. There's just a couple. There's the Drezites, and they're the amoeba folk, and then there's the Tetaldians, and they're the once monkey men who now are brains in robots. And the Tetaldians and the Drezites and the humans have not all gotten along very well. The Drezites and the Tetaldians arrived on Earth one day and were having a bit of a dispute. And most life on Earth was annihilated. And that was the Anubis conflict and the thing that sort of Keith lost his son and his father that day. And it sort of gave rise to the Fear Agents and the battle against the alien invaders. And in order to get rid of the alien invaders, Heath had to commit xenocide, so to speak. He had to wipe out an alien race of these Drezites, and very few of them remain. So a lot of what we've been seeing in the other volumes is Heath and these Drezites having sort of conflict and dealing with one another, as Heath is sort of being hunted by these remaining Drezites, and the Drezites then, went back to Earth after people had started to rebuild, and they populated it and infected it with these feeder aliens. A lot of what's been going on is Heath and humanity versus the Drezites. And I think that what we saw at the end of the Eye Against Eye arc was that the Tetaldians are the big players all along. As the Drezites and the humans sort of realize what's going on and make peace, Heath blinks his eye, and all of a sudden every human, they're having a bit of a celebration out in front of the Alamo. About the peace accord with the Drezites. He kisses his wife and opens his eyes, and every human in the audience is suddenly a Tetaldian human hybrid, sort of a robot zombie monster. And he doesn't know what's going on, and he looks down, and his daughter Eden is half robot, and she shoots him in the gullet, and he falls over, and he's clearly dead. And that's where we ended the last arc. So starting on issue 28, we resolve all of the sort of loose ends from Eye Against Eye, and we build into some complete insanity from there.
I can't think of a better setting to wrap things up than the Alamo, too.
yeah. I can't help myself, being the Lone Star Texan space. Cowboy. Everything always draws back. Like, I put the Alamo back there. I'll just have the Alamo as a space station that follows him around.
Either that, I was going to make some reference to his belt buckle as well, because I'm looking at the art for the cover, and that belt buckle is huge. So,
yeah, he's got a bigger one. That's the thing. The whole plot is actually going to be revealed that it all revolves around his belt buckle, which has been controlling everybody the whole time and have been the master manipulator.
It's a sentient. It's a sentient belt buckle. You never knew. So cool.
There you go. No reason to buy the series now.
Spoiled.
It was the belt buckle.
So, all right, cool. So it all kicks off in Fear Agent 28, and that's on sale, I think, July 28th, I think it goes on sale now. So that's what I have here. I could be wrong. We'll post the correct date. But yeah, people definitely should check it out. I mean, Fear Agent's been a long one of our favorite titles, and I know we're going to be sad to see it go. But it's I'm as I get older, I'm okay with the ending. Because we our vague references to the TV show that just ended that we won't name, but has brought up, like, actually one of the guys on our website wrote an article comparing it to Claremont's X-Men, and he was saying the difference being that Lost or Fear Agent are ending, whereas X-Men will never end. It's nice to close the book sometimes. So
it's hard to write, story. The idea of story, so much of it hinges on character arc, on a character starting off in one place and growing and learning and becoming something else, and sort of the identification that the viewer can have in watching that, in that transformation, as as farm boy Luke Skywalker becomes rebel Jedi badass, or Han Solo, the tough old grifter, becomes heart of gold Superman hero guy. and you know, using Star Wars is the easy sort of comparison, but it's difficult in a never-ending series or something like this, because when you do arcs and characters grow and change and transform and have their environments affect them, you have two types of viewers, I think. You have people who are very comfortable with the sitcom format, where they want things that happen. It's dramatic. There's an emotional heartstring pulled, maybe. And then they want things right back to where they were the next day. And then you have other people who are sort of more committed to seeing things develop and seeing an actual story. And in terms of, you know, what HBO has added, or, you know, going back even further to something like Twin Peaks, which sort of gave birth to most of it, or The Prisoner, if you want to be an asshole, you know, the idea that people want to see something where there are character arcs and the characters do have, you know, a path to follow, and it's not formulaic, and it doesn't just, there's no reset button every week for the new episode. And in terms of that, you know, I think things like Fear Agent are better to end where they were initially intended to end. You know, I mean, the book's been a tremendous success for us and has done a lot for all of our careers. I think people's enjoyment of it, you know, I think it's really easy for me to keep working with Jerome and Tony, because we've each done 4 or 5 trade paperbacks of material together through this, and people respond well to it. So it might be something, it might be a mistake to end it, but I honestly think that this is how I wrote the story in the first place. And it's something that I've been on the, you know, Tony's had to talk me back down a few times, where I'm like, well, you know, but then this and that. And he's like, you know, just go with your original outline. And I'm like, all right. So sticking to that integrity, it gives you a full character arc. You see the growth of the character. We reveal a lot in this final arc about some of the missing pieces in Heath's backstory, like, you know, how he and Charlotte fell in love, things that, like, you're just sort of told and expected to understand in the story henceforth. They're in love. Well, we see why they're in love, and we've never met Heath's mom before, and so I'm delving into a lot of that and doing the final polish on who this guy is as a character piece, and it has a nice natural ending. So, you know, we're doing our best to just look at it like there's other stories and there's other characters we can develop, and hopefully we can attach, or we can connect with the viewers and the readers how we have with Fear Agent, but it feels there's a nice integrity to finishing it the way we planned, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it will long live on our shelves and be one that we recommend and turn people on to, and hopefully continue to sell well in the reprints edition for you guys for years to come.
I hope. You know, again, like, and I've already said this, but I really do think that there's something to be said for when people know a story has a beginning, middle, and end. And, you know, there's an intention in Fear Agent that's been there from the beginning. You know, you can write a 5-page outline, and it literally turns into 32 pages of comic. You know, like, it was all bullet-pointed about things that would happen in it. But I never expected we'd actually get to the end of the thing. And so, anyway.
It's an accomplishment. Yeah, congratulations. So is there any update on or any sort of information about Fear Agent in other mediums? I mean, I know a couple of weeks ago we posted the fan-made Fear Agent video game. That was pretty cool, and thank you for that. So I know a lot of people enjoyed that.
There's that. I mean, it's nice because there's such an underground of, you know, the fans, the Fear Agent fans are just amazing. It's so flattering. There's been a sculpt that's made that we're talking about getting made into a series. That's
cool.
Gorgeous. But the for other media stuff, the big thing that's coming up is the Fear Agent Viewmaster series. We're not going to actually be, you know, making Viewmasters, and I don't think they still make them. I could be wrong. So you'll have to actually go and get a Viewmaster, and it's not being, like, mass produced, you know. But I am taking photographs and cutting them out, and then putting them on, like, transparency, and
the little wheel, the white wheel, right?
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I'm taking an oatmeal box, and I'm cutting off the top of the lid. And if you want to come to my house and just, you know, sit around and check out some Fear Agent Viewmaster, I just figure that's the kind of thing that, you know, some sweet bros could totally do. Mostly just you, Ron.
Okay. Awesome.
Is it weird if I'm, is this not the right time? I've just got so many complicated feelings.
Wow, it's a personal invitation to read Fear Agent and Viewmaster for him.
I just want you to come over and look at my Fear Agent Viewmaster with me. And whatever happens is going to totally be between us. Totally on the QT, my friend. That's how we roll in Portland. I know you guys think you're a liberal in San Francisco, but we do crazy shit up here.
It's this crazy, wacky stuff in Portland. All right, well, you know, I'll start looking at flights. We'll have a good time. It'll be fun. Anyway, so I'll take that as a subtle jab that there's nothing else that you can talk about in the World of Fury Agent other than the new series.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see how you segue out of that.
There's no way I can. You just got to move on.
Just going to abruptly say it's time to move on. No, there's no news with the film stuff that I can talk about. Hopefully by San Diego, but it's all under lock and key. I think that there's, I think people want a Fear Agent movie. I know I do.
Yeah.
I probably want one more than most anyone else, actually, as it turns out.
I could see you as having a vested interest in that, but I think it'd be fun.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. So when news comes, I will make sure that we give it right to you first.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway. You'll be in my basement because I lured you in with my Viewmaster trick, so I could just come downstairs and tell you by then.
Right, exactly. But I won't be impressed because it's not a Viewmaster, so I've already seen the pinnacle of entertainment.
You'll just be so hungry.
Exactly.
So hungry.
Please help.
Oh, I don't, look, man, I don't care. I don't care about any of this.
Right. Well then, so
you're just happy it's not time for another rape. Oh sure, man, that's terrific. Oh, that's great news.
I'm just more curious what your wife is doing while you're downstairs doing Viewmasters with me.
Oh, she's none the wiser. She keeps her mouth shut. She knows how to play ball.
She knows how to play ball.
Papa's career is on the rise. She knows who butters the bread and on what side and all those things and stuff.
Dear Lord. So moving on from Fear Agent, some of the news that came out of C2E2 I found interesting was that you are now delving in Marvel into the X universe, into the X-Men's world with X-Force.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the story there?
Man, I have not had this much fun in a while. I mean, as somebody who was, hook, line, and sinker for the X stuff growing up. I mean, I started in 1984?
Ooh,
I don't even
good time.
Anymore.
Good time to jump on board there.
It was. And, you know, at that time, in order to get back issues, you had to go to the dusty old comic shop and pay $20 a piece for, you know, VG fine copies of the stuff. Because by that point, the Byrne, Claremont stuff had become collector item back issue territory. And so I think I jumped on it like, it was John Romita Jr., probably issue like 175 or 170 or something like that. But, I mean, I had read a couple issues and just was hooked. And so, of course, I was out mowing lawns. I mean, I'm a walking cliche when it comes to my love for this stuff. I was out mowing lawns every weekend to go and get another $20 to skate down to the comic shop and get, you know, another issue of the stuff to find out what had happened back in the day. So I read the stuff religiously until, 98, 99.
Wow.
When it was just,
you held in for a long time.
I stuck with it. Yeah. I was committed. Yeah. And I moved to San Francisco and I was just busted ass broke and I needed drug money. So it was like, oh, I'm going to either find out what happened to Jean Grey or I'm going to get my sweet, sweet heroin. And, and that horse has pull, but, So I've gotten into this thing and it's just hard. I've already got, 15 arcs worth of ideas. I've got so much stuff I want to do. And the first one is to reimagine Apocalypse for the Marvel Universe right now. And, Jerome Pena's pages are just next generation, legendary, amazing. They're so beautiful. He's just dumping three full days of labor onto each one. I can't build them up enough. There's no way I say anything too much, and people go, that's a little disappointing. You know, all you do is look at it and go, holy shit, Jerome Pena, and then you run to his house and lift him on your shoulders and have a parade for him. But people should, because his stuff is gorgeous. So, yeah, we're neck deep in that right now, and working with Axel Alonso on that again. And so Axel was the editor on the Punisher stuff that Jerome and I did. And, it's great. Nice, comfortable working relationship, and Jerome and I speak the same language. I mean, I think at this point we have done, four trades together. So, whatever that is, 400 or 500 pages worth of material. And then, it's nice. It's nice to be given that vote of confidence on a big project like this. And it's also nice to be able to do it with friends. And so it's very comfortable. And, you know, you're not trying to figure out what the artist is going to do. I know what the artist is going to do. And you know, it's nice. I wouldn't want to go into this in a situation where I was getting comfortable with a brand new team.
Very cool. So so is it inheriting the current status quo of X-Force? I mean, is it the Wolverine-led Death Squad team with the gray costumes and the red eyes, or is it going to go in a different direction?
It's not an entirely different direction, but it's a different direction. I don't think I can say too much about it because I know everything. These are all closely guarded secrets.
Fair enough. I got to ask.
You know, I'm not – I think that, you know, I have a, you know, if anybody who knows my sensibility for things knows that I'm not going to do a straight up dark, gritty, series. It just isn't in me. But I think that we have found, it's like Axel always says, think Munich. And it gets me really excited because when I think Munich, I think, oh, that's what they're doing. You know, it makes it very human and I can really get my head around what the team is all about. And so in terms of, you know, of a character like Apocalypse returning and the heroic age being a signpost for the time that the age of Apocalypse begins, and Wolverine and his teammates, and he's got a co-captain here as well to sort of keep the balance of power in check. Given what they're doing, it seemed like a nice, nice decision. With a co-captain situation, it seems like if you're going to go out and target somebody for assassination, you better have two heads, you know, put together to try and figure out if it's the right thing that you're doing. It's a ton of fun, and I think it's for people who've been reading the book and enjoying it. It's very similar in that the team is. They're the shadow team. They're not in the foreground. They're not the people that are out taking pictures. They're not the face of the remaining mutant population. But there's also a high adventure element to it that I can't help but infuse things with. And I don't know. I think that when you see the new horsemen and who they are and how we're dealing with them and all these things, I think that people will be really excited, you know, and I'm definitely approaching it in a way where old fans will be happy and new fans or people who are just picking up the book for the first time aren't scratching their head because I'm leaning on continuity. You know, I'm not. Everything in there gets explained as if it were the first issue of a first series with a new villain and all of these things are brand new, so that, you know, you can be uninitiated to the X-verse and enter in this. And, you know, I think old fans will be glad because I'm very mindful of what's happened before and making sure that this is a natural progression from that stuff and that none of that is sort of swept under the rug. But what I am doing is making sure that I'm writing this as if it's the first book of a brand new comic book. And so I work really hard on this thing to make sure that everything is accessible to a new reader and all these characters are defined and the villain is defined and you don't have to have read anything leading into it.
Well, that's great. And as an X-Men world fan, I mean, you throw out Apocalypse and Horsemen and stuff like that, and you definitely got my attention, and so it's good that doing it in a way to service fans like me who are obsessed with continuity, but then also bring in new people, because that's the real challenge with the X-Men.
It really is. It really is. And you know, again, you also have to approach it in a way where, you know, you're telling a story that has an arc, and you're doing that with characters that are always around and have been around and in and out of, you know, in and out of existence when it comes to, you know, some of the characters. And anyway, it's a slippery slope because I start saying things that might reveal who the characters.
Okay. But so the one question I have, which is always anybody who tackles writing Wolverine is, and especially for you, writing Wolverine on the X-Men Shadow Team, how do you resolve the fact that one of the co-leaders of the Shadow Team is also a very public member of the Avengers? Those two seem kind of at odds.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like it's like the thing he moonlights at. That, you know, the Avengers know he's off in San Francisco doing his X business. The X-Men know that he's the face of the mutants, and I guess, you know, there's a couple more now, but he's been the face, the mutant face for the Avengers team. And I think that as a as an ambassador, that's worked pretty well. I think that you take your tough badass guy and you send him off to be part of the big public shiny team. And it's good for business, you know, and it's good to see a mutant out there. It's good for everybody else to see a character who, up until Bendis, you know, put him on the team, Wolverine was sort of the, you know, I'm trying to think in terms of what the rest of the world knew of him. I don't think much. I think that, you know, he was the guy who you probably would be afraid of if you saw. And this does a lot. Him being on the Avengers does a lot to sort of, you know, make him heroic in people's eyes. And this, you know, as a character, you look at what he's been through and what he's dealing with, and now that he's got all of those terrible memories sort of brought back to light, Wolverine probably needed something that helped him remind himself that, you know, he's got a lot of redemption issues. And I think playing a role in the Avengers and whatnot has been a lot to help that. I think that, you know, time-wise, I love Jason Aaron did an issue with Adam Kubert. I think it was 75.
Oh, that issue was that it was a two-parter. It was that two, and it was like a day in the life of Wolverine or a week in the life or something like that. It was great.
He took a double-page spread and showed all of the various places that he's in during the week. And it's like, you know, fighting Hydra with Spider-Man and then jumping forward with the X-Men. It was just amazing. And he worked it into the character in a way that I've sort of, you know, I've sort of embraced. It was it's a really smart way to think of this guy who's always on the move, always running, always on the move, always running. And whatever it is that he's done in the past, whatever blood is on his hands, whatever nightmares he's got, if he slows down, then it gives them a chance to start creeping back into his head. I really think that Jason nailed it with that.
He's done an amazing job on Weapon X, that title. The Wolverine Weapon X has been the best Wolverine book in years, in my mind.
So, yeah. Jason's gonna be great with anything he's handed. You know, I think that Jason's one of those guys that if he's got a taste for the character. Even if he didn't, I trust in Jason Aaron.
Yeah, nice, very good. So I'm excited to read your X-Force. That should be fun. And you're also stepping into the Deadpool territory, aren't you?
Yeah. We've got a Jerome Pena and I getting a chance to take a crack at Deadpool is a lot of fun. And we did a big, I think it's a 9 or 10 page story in the upcoming Deadpool anthology. I forgot the exact title of it, but it ships, I think, in August, and it's Jerome going to just town on it. It was sort of something that we were doing. He was doing it while I was getting X-Force done, and he had all the time in the world to just drench it in love. And it's the most ridiculous thing. It really goes back tonally to what I used to do in my underground days in books like, you know, like Blackheart Billy, more specifically. I realized that Deadpool is, you know, very similar in tonally to Blackheart Billy. And so as I was writing it, I got to scratch an itch that I haven't been able to scratch in a long time with, you know, high adventure absurdity that was also sort of self-aware.
You're totally right, now that I think about it. I mean, it's funny because you said you were writing Deadpool, and I kind of scoffed because admittedly I'm not a big Deadpool fan. But given Blackheart Billy and given just what I know from talking to you, albeit 10 minutes ago with the Viewmaster, you know, like, I think writing Deadpool could be something you could do pretty well at, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain aspect of the absurdity that, you know, it speaks to a lot of what, you know, I did in my underground days, where, you know, I've always tried to bridge the gap between my indie sensibility and my mainstream sensibility, and sometimes falling into the middle school can make it difficult because the super indie don't necessarily want anything that has, you know, a tinge of mainstream, and the mainstream might not understand the tinge of indie. But I kind of think that if you handle Deadpool correctly, which I hope we did, that you get a laugh every couple pages, as well as looking at some really, really nice superhero art. We've gone bat house crazy with it. Yeah, it's very similar to the Viewmaster story in tonalities.
Nice.
I don't know how much I should. I don't know.
No, don't.
It's got a scene in there that I think will go down in nerd history. As I can't believe it. It's ridiculous, but anyway. So yeah, that comes out in August.
Something to look forward to.
People who haven't, people who haven't read Fear Agent or The Punisher, and don't know what Jerome and I do together, you know, pick this thing up and get a taste of our first crack on an X character. I think it's good.
Very cool, very cool. So, and in addition to, you know, you've been in addition to the X-Force and Deadpool stuff, you've been plugging away on The Punisher and with the Frankencastle storyline. I gotta admit, I mean, the art and the stuff Tony's done has been amazing, but I've enjoyed the hell out of the story, and I wasn't sure I was going to buy it And
sure.
I'm hook, line, and sinker at this point. It was great. It was a ton of fun.
Well, I mean, I've had a ton of fun with it. It was one of those things, you know, and when I pitched it to Axel, basically at the end of Dark Reign, I'm like, look, you know, Frank basically just had to kill his own family. The Hood is delving in all of this Dormammu black magic and resurrecting people left and right. And he basically takes, digs up Frank's family, and, you know, Frank wakes up in a demonic chamber, and as Microchip shoots G.W. Bridge in the face as he's strapped to an altar, the energy then finishes the spell and resurrects Frank's family. And with Frank's family resurrected, Frank waits two beats and makes Firebrand torch him, put him back in the ground. And for me, that had to twist the knife in a long-term way. And, you know, as I was talking to Axel, I kept using the word monster and monster and monster. He's a monster. He's a monster. He knows he's a monster. And so as we were then getting ready to kill him, and I knew that, you know, that was where I wanted it to go. I wanted Frank to be so demolished and beaten down that when the list came around and when Osborne made his play, that whoever Osborne sent was going to kill Frank. But kind of, they were a gun Frank uses to kill himself, and that's something we delve into in the upcoming Dock and crossover with Dark Wolverine. And so Frank does sort of use Dokken to kill himself. I mean, it is sort of a suicide play, and Frank is completely broken down. And by the end of that fight, you know, he's slinging a knife blindly, but Frank's head someplace else. Frank's dealing with something else. And so when we knew he was dead and cut to pieces, I had a number of different solutions and ways out. One of them is a real thing called extracellular matrix that I've done a lot of research on, that is a powder that regenerates human... It's been used so far to regenerate, like, fingers. Like, literally, if a guy's finger gets lobbed off, you can use this extracellular matrix and regenerate your finger like a fucking lizard. It's insane.
Oh, my God.
And it's real. Oh. So for me, I'm thinking, like, if that's real, and it is a real thing, you can go to YouTube and watch videos about it. You can read all kinds of articles on the web all about this stuff. I'm thinking, if that's in the real world, then Reed Richards must have kicked out some science at some point. People are using, you know, like... Tony Stark, some person, you know, Stuart Clark, I don't know, some mad genius must have concocted that times five in the MU. And basically, I was just going to have this extracellular matrix stuff, you know, regenerating him, and I kept envisioning it, you know, he looks like Frankenstein, he looks like Frankenstein. And I was like, oh my God, he's a monster, he looks like Frankenstein, he's a monster, he looks like Frankenstein! And I got on the phone and I was talking to Tony about it, and it sort of tied into something that we had been trying to do. He and Jason, Aaron, and Fraction and I had been talking about the monsters a ways back and had some ideas for some miniseries things that we wanted to do. And one idea that I had was that all of the monsters are being hunted to extinction, and that they've moved into the Morlock tunnels underneath New York. And you've got all of these Atlas era Kirby and Ditko beasts crawling around down there, and all these Gerber era 70s guys. It's sort of, you know, the Legion of Monsters, which hadn't really been reformed except in a few small shorts and minis, were down there protecting them. And so once I had Frankenstein, you know, once I had patched up, cut up Frank Castle, I was like, oh my God, you know, extracellular matrix is boring. It's got to be like Morbius uses what he knows about his old pal Frankenstein to resurrect Frank and put him back together to help them with this onslaught. And, you know, the Bloodstone is something that I've always been a big fan of, and it's one of these really super great, powerful Marvel relics that always, you know, it existed mostly in like the horrorverse and all of their different monster books. And then, of course, you had that famous Grunwald Kieran Dwyer arc where the Bloodstone saga. That was one of my favorite things when I was reading books pretty rapidly. The Bloodstone saga. And so I was pretty familiar with how that power worked, and I knew that the main thing about the Bloodstone is that the Exo Mind gives you power proportionate to your desire for revenge. And then I just had a giant boner, and I was swinging it around my office, knocking things over and screaming out loud, proportionate to your desire for revenge, is what I would say to myself over and over again. Because all of a sudden, you start thinking about Frank Castle, you know, extracellular matrix. I mean, that's real boring, you know, what if Frank Castle ends up with the Bloodstone? And he does end up with the Bloodstone. Fucking Christ! you know, it gives Frank the opportunity. So Frank is one of the themes in the Punisher stuff has been redemption and healing from what happened with his family. He's fighting zombies, and the sounds sound like, you know, his family. When they came out of their coffins, he's having nightmares about them burning and walking towards him and asking him why. And I think he realizes throughout the course of this, with all the supernatural mumbo-jumbo he's been dropped into, is that it wasn't his family, and that's why he put him down. He knew it wasn't his family. You know, they were something else. All of this craziness that's going around, that wasn't, you know, whoever was in those bodies, whatever energy was in those bodies, it wasn't Maria, it wasn't the kids. So he's sort of, you know, fighting against Hellsgard and these in the Hunter of Monster Special Force, but he's really healing physically and mentally from what we did to him in that second volume. And I think people who read it and give it a shot are have that same reaction that you had. I think that you can look at that and think that, you know, oh, that's silly. But it's something that it's all about the execution, and you know, Tony and Roland and Brereton and I are in love with it and giving it everything we've got. So people who read it seem to like it.
Good stuff. And so now, and as you said, Frankencastle isn't going anywhere for anytime soon, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's stuff coming up. Without spoiling anything, I'd say, you know, It's definitely that the next arc still deals with it. The arc after that is about the repercussions and things. But I think that, without giving too much away, I would say that there's, you know, there's more changes in store for Frank coming up.
Very cool. So, and then in addition to that, we were talking before we started recording, I was just complimenting you on the most recent issue of the last Days of American Crime, how I'm enjoying the larger format of that book. I know some folks have been curious, you know, what the release schedule looks like is and stuff like that. People seem really enjoying it. When's the next issue of Last Days of American Crime due?
I think it's San Diego, around San Diego time. It's a little more than half done now, and you know, we had a decision to make where it was either going to be, you know, ask Greg to speed up and crack the whip, or let Greg do what he's been doing and look back on this thing as a 150-page love letter to, you know, high concept crime stuff. And the pages are so beautiful, and what he's doing is so labor intensive. Every figure is perfect. Every panel has full background. It's such depth in each panel, beyond just the amazing staging and figure work that he gets, and the facial expressions and the palettes that he creates for each scene. You know, that's one thing a lot of guys forget. And Greg is not just an amazing illustrator. You look at the palettes. Every time we change scenes, it's a new palette, and it's a brilliant new palette. I mean, like, next generation, really smart. You could, you know, get Lichtenstein to put it on a canvas and blow it up onto a wall. And so it's going to be, you know, it's going to be San Diego. It'll be a little bit late. But again, you know, as we were just discussing, the nice thing about the 50-page format is that it's a big read. You know, when it does come out, it's not like, it does, obviously, you know, I always try and do a story so far. So you get a little bit of, oh, that's right, well, that's what happened, and you get caught up. But then you get a big chunk of story, and it's a story that, you know, at this point I've written that thing a couple few times. The screenplay is finished. I've written the screenplay now. That thing got as much love and attention as I'm capable of, and beyond, you know, whatever I've done with it or haven't done with it, the art alone is worth the price of admission for the $4.99.
Well, I love it because it's like I was saying, it's like a little mini trade. I mean, it's, you know, like, it's the kind of thing where it came out on Wednesday, and I actually actively put it aside to read, you know, on Thursday or Friday, like, after, you know, because on Wednesdays you plow through your issues and 22 pages, sure, you get through them. But this one I wanted to sit down and savor, and you know, it works more in that, you know, kind of graphic novelty kind of format than an issue format. So definitely very cool, definitely worth waiting for. So
yeah, it's a nice experiment anyway. You know, I think that, again, you're either going to wait, you know, if it were in 22 page increments, it would be coming out more frequent. But I think that, you know, $5 is, you know, given that most 22-page books are $4, you're going to end up getting 26 additional pages for $1, and they're top grade, amazing pages. And hopefully the longer length helps you immerse in the story a little bit more without having it being broken up as a monthly reader.
Cool. And are you having fun with the whole movie world thing aspect of it? And you don't have to, I mean, I know you probably limited what you can say, but that's good. It seems to be progressing, right?
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, the screenplay has been, I had written a screenplay last year for XXX Zombies, and it was my first time around, and I think I used that to work out all my kinks. So going into this thing, and having, you know, written a screenplay basically for the Bulletstorm video game that I'm doing for EA Epic People Can Fly, I was in a good place for this. And also, given that I had written the comic book already, I'd done the entire story once. So then, you know, rewriting it in screenplay format and then, you know, having it sort of in my head, It's a story I know really well. And anyway, I've done a couple drafts now, and just to rave reviews, the final draft I turned in, you know, all the guys at CAA send me emails telling me how much they loved it, and it's with a director and an actor right now. You know, Sam Worthington is locked in. He's going to star as Kevin Cash and produce it. And the next actor is fucking crazy huge. And It obviously, any time you have somebody of that caliber, their manager has to read the script before it gets to them. And the manager read the screenplay and loved it. So now we've got a super A-list badass reading the screenplay right now to play Graham potentially, and an amazing director. So I should have news. Definitely, we'll have news by San Diego. What's on the horizon for Last Days of American Crime? But I think from what I'm seeing and hearing, there's very little chance that thing won't become a film. It sounds like fast track.
That's awesome. Well, it's a great story, and I'd love to see it in real people, you know, talking parts.
Real people talking
parts. I'm tired. So,
I like watching real people talking on screen. Big popcorn. Good.
Well, it should be fun to see how it rolls out. All right, cool. So, all right. So, in our last remaining little bit of time, you know, I want to be, you know, respectful of your time. I'm sure you got a ton of stuff to do, but we did ask, like I mentioned earlier, we asked, posted on Twitter saying that we were talking to Rick, and we asked the folks out in the Twitterverse and the iFan base if they had any questions for you. So, do you mind answering a couple?
Sure, of course.
All right, cool. And you don't have to be long-winded answers. They can just be yes or no or things like that.
I don't know how to do anything other than long-winded answers.
I know, exactly.
Answers.
All right, well, our first question is from Paul, who's one of our writers. He's at Fuzzy Typewriter on Twitter. And he wants to know, are there more plans for the Marvel Monsterverse following Dr. Voodoo and Frankencastle?
Yes. Yes, there are. I have plans for Dr. Voodoo that it may or may not come together, but the Legion of Monsters, we are in talks of doing things as well. So hopefully we will see both of those corners of the Marvel Universe brought back.
Cool. All right. Goof Ganute, who has a couple of questions in here, wants to know, since you come from an animation background, do you see your scripts as a series of storyboards?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm a storyboard artist too. I made my living as a storyboard artist for a couple of years. So, I also like to work with artists who understand storyboarding, because there's a fluidity to the storytelling that plays out on the page as if it were moving. There's a lot of guys who handle pages as very static illustrated scenes, and that's not the kind of comic books I'm a big fan of. I'm a big fan of people who would, you know, understand the rules of storytelling, and I think that storyboarding is something that, you know, there's no comic book artist who learned how to storyboard and then it hurt their pages. So, yeah, I definitely do. It's hard for me, because sometimes I'll be thinking in terms of beating out action how it would be in a storyboard, and I have to go through and go, you don't have space for every single one of those action beats. You have to pull it back a little. So. Right.
It's an interesting perspective being on the other, you know, like you've been on the other side of the script, and you've been, especially in animation and video games and things like that, and then coming back and writing it and knowing that you're going to hand it to an artist. I got to imagine it's going to be unique in that regard. So.
Well, yeah, it's a responsibility. Yeah. You know, you know the kind of time that somebody's going to put in, how much of their life is going to be spent bringing what you're writing to you know, fruition, and it's a responsibility. It really is, and you have to make sure that what you're giving them is very thoughtful, and that you're not just moving through it, and it's not just, you know. I work really hard to make sure that if you look at most of my comic books, that you get very, very few, if any, heads talking in a room. And anytime two people are talking, unless it's a very, you know, personal, emotional moment that needs to be quiet and in a room, I always try and think of a secondary action that they can be doing so that, that there's something visually interesting and while the people are talking, you know? And so I think that that probably comes from the fact that I respect the amount of time the artists put in, and I want to keep things visually interesting as well as, you know, captivating stories.
All right. David O. Weilgaz, and I apologize if I mispronounce that, says, Rick Remender, what are some of your favorite comics of all time?
Of all time, you know, I guess the Klaus 8-Ball stuff is probably on the very top of the list of rereadability.
Did you get Wilson?
I did. I loved it.
Wasn't it great? Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah.
I loved it. It's got that old Klaus, you know, humor worked in there, but as well as in this very disturbing character piece where you're not sure if you should be laughing, and that's always the best kind. And as that character was sort of developed and unfolded, he lives and breathes in a way that very few people can make characters work. So of all time, you know, Klaus definitely in the top. For superhero stuff, I'll just argue with anybody about All-Star Superman because I just love it. It speaks to a lot of what I'm doing in the new X-Force book. I've reread all of Grant's X-Men stuff and reread All-Star Superman, and it's very important that Jerome Peña is on par with Frank, you know, and so I've got to do my very best to try and bring that same kind of imagination and in-depth storytelling. So that stuff speaks to me. And then obviously like Mike Mignola's Hellboy stuff, and Frank Miller, like everybody else, you know, Year One, Born Again, all the 80s Miller stuff and the Sin City stuff. I grew up reading that and was always a huge influence. And Mike Zeck, you know, anything Zeck did, I was a huge fan of. So I could go on and on. And then, you know, Evan Dorkin and Adrian Tomei and all the... I'm a nerd, you know. I'm just so immersed in this stuff, trying to highlight who is on the top of that list. It's like with music. You have to give me a genre and an era to get a list out of me.
Exactly. I can never pick one, like, my favorite comic or my favorite music, you know, band or anything like that. It's hard to nail it down.
Tough.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. Jimmy F18V wants to know what says that Last Days of American Crime is fantastic and wants to know, are there any other stories in this world, like another guy trying something similar somewhere else in the U.S.?
Yeah, but it's not similar. It's more like, you know, what are the militias doing, and it's America, and America finds out that it's got 2 weeks before no more crime. So you got to think that there's about 500 million stories to be told. So there are many, many plans for other stories within this universe.
Excellent. All right, a couple of related questions here. RJ Spring wants to know if there's an omnibus in the works, and we said there is.
Yep.
And JGG0610, good guy, wants to know, is there any chance of Fear Agent moving to Icon? Which I'm going to guess no.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't see why. I guess no. Dark Horse has been great to us, and I don't know. Not that moving to Icon is an indicator that the last company you're with hasn't been great to you. But the book's coming to an end, and we're doing an omnibus, and Mike Richardson's running all the media stuff on that. So
that's the thing. I think what people don't realize, and you know, Lord knows I'm several steps away from it, from what I've heard, is that, you know, guys like Bendis and Brubaker and Miller, who are over at Icon, they literally are doing everything. Like, they're producing their own book. You know, like it's just the imprint. Whereas Dark Horse gives you some. They're marketing it. They're doing all that sort of. They're publishing it. You know.
Sure.
That's been my perception. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that it's probably very similar to the Image deal, and that you own it all, and that you're running the show a little bit on it. But I know that there's definitely help there to be had. I just don't know anything about the deal.
Cool. All right, Goof Gnut's back, saying that on one of our previous interviews, you mentioned that you were a while back you were agreeing to do work because you were afraid of work drying up. And but now that you're established, do you still have that work ethic?
I do nothing but work. I mean, you know, right now I'm writing Punisher. I'm writing X-Force. I'm doing this last Fear Agent. I've got the Last Days of American Crime comic coming to a close. I've got two other things at Marvel that are unannounced. And then in the middle of that, I've got Bulletstorm, which is, you know, this gigantic, insane. If you like Fear Agent, this is gonna give you a huge boner. It's so much fun, this game, and it doesn't take itself seriously. It's not one of these dark uber realistic military games, which are fun and have their time. This is just a joyful explosion of pulp science fiction in video game form. And they brought me in and just let me go nuts with it. So I've been busy with that. And then the Last Days of American Crime screenplay, that was no joke. That was a ton of work. So this year, I've got a new daughter. I don't even know if she's around anymore. I basically have been locked up in my studio working 14-hour days for, you know, longer than I can remember. I mean, even back in 2005, I was working full-time at EA, and I was doing Nightmare at IDW and drawing Man with the Screaming Brain at Dark Horse and writing Strange Girl and Fear Agent and Dawning Creature and Sea of Red. I mean, I just made my mind up to make this work and to do what I wanted to do, and it's been a lot of work, but it's nice. I'm very fulfilled and enjoying the projects that I have on my plate right now.
That's good. It's good to see it all, you know, kind of work out and get rewarded with more work. I mean, that's the thing, is that work begets work when you do well.
It's true. But the hardest thing, and I think speaking more to the question, I probably went off on a tangent, is the difficulty as a freelancer in remembering that there's more work. But hey, there's more work. There'll be more work. And, you know, Axel has to remind me that, you know, like, well, what's going on? You know, he's like, there's more work. There's more work. It'll be okay. And so I don't know how many years it'll take me before I can get that through my head. You know, hey, there's more work. You know, I've talked to so many freelancers about this who have been working forever and they never turned it off. You know, somebody told me a story once how Gil Kane, you know, to the very end was overbooking himself to the teeth. Because I don't know. It's not a lack of confidence. I feel good about what I'm doing, and I'm working with really brilliant artists, and very, very pleased with how I've progressed as a writer. Not to be self-aggrandizing or anything, just confident. I feel confident in what I'm doing, but I don't feel confident that I'll always have work. I just feel like every job's probably the last one that's going to come down the road. I don't know.
It's probably a good way to be. It keeps you on edge. You know, it keeps you. That hungry aspect, you know, the hungry ethic, but still.
But yeah, it does. It may, you know, you can't hack when you do that. You know, right. You got to make sure everything. I'm terrified, so everything I do gets all the love I can possibly muster.
Yeah, I'd much rather read, you know, kind of hungry, you know, non-hacky work than complacent, boring hacky work. You know, so.
Sure. Yeah.
So, cool. All right. Next question comes from Alan23D, who wants to know if you're ever going to work with Greg Tichini again after Last Days of American Crime. He loved the book and hopes to see another collaboration.
Yeah, Greg, you know, I imagine Greg is, you know, I'm happily introducing him into my stable of dudes who get tricked into working with me forever.
Nice.
Greg and I have been talking about a science fiction project. There's, you know, more potential for Last Days of American Crime. So I would say that you know, between the sci-fi project we're cooking up together, American Crime, and whatever else we might do, I'll be working with Greg as long as he'll work with me.
Cool. Excellent. All right. Our next two questions come from Larry's Comics, who wants to know, why does the current incarnation of Frank Castle absolutely suck ass? And he follows that up with saying, sales of the Punisher at an all-time low. Are you responsible?
Are you Ron responsible?
No, I'm not. I think he's asking you. Are you responsible? And
no, that was directed at me.
Yeah, I think it was directed at you. So,
well, how about you answer that, Ron? Are you am I responsible? I, you know, the thing is that it's regional. If the guy's sales are down, I'm sorry about that. You know,
yeah, that's a bummer. Everyone should know, Larry. This is the Twitter account from a retailer. So,
I don't know where Larry's Comics is. I know that. I tend to sell better in big cities, and I'm not disparaging small cities. I'm just saying that my audience tends to live in the city. But as for you know, his sales going down and his need to tell me that it sucks ass, I wish that he had the I wish that he was a little more human in terms of putting a little thought into his criticism and trying to not write it as if he's a 14-year-old boy. I don't gain anything from his criticism. It just sounds like somebody angrily wishing that they could be doing what I'm doing, and that they would do it better. I can tell anybody who doesn't like it that we've given it all we've got, and I can't imagine, you know, I can't imagine between Axel and Sebastian, our editors, and Tony and myself, and Dan Brereton, and now Roland Boschi. I can't imagine a team of people being more committed and more in love with something and giving it all they've got. And it probably speaks to the type of story that this guy and maybe the people in his store are used to, and maybe they're more of the sitcom people where they don't like to see things shaken up or change or you know, morph into anything different. And that's just going to come down to taste, you know. So I think that I think it doesn't help the industry or help anybody in particular to publicly bandy about things like suck ass, you know. I don't know if he used an X in suck or not.
No, it's straight. It was spelled normal. Suck is normal.
Straight up. Well, there's a point for that.
Yeah.
But I think that it would be better, you know, he would be better suited to maybe try and understand why the people who love it do love it, and to maybe, you know, not necessarily express as a retailer who's trying to sell the products such, you know, vitriolic, spiteful sort of, you know.
That does seem kind of weird. Especially criticizing about the sales at an all-time low and making you responsible when he could be selling it. You know, like, I'm not a retailer.
I was a retailer.
Yeah.
You know, I was a retailer for 4 years. I know that I didn't care for certain things people were buying, and I didn't care for certain things that I knew that I could sell. And it doesn't mean that I was lying to people, but I understood when people liked Gen 13 or whatever, I read it. I understand why people were attached to it. And when people would ask me about it, I would tell them what's appealing about it. That was my job. And I don't know. It's fine. I mean, I respect people's opinion not to like it. I wholeheartedly disagree, and nobody's made a point that's made me change my opinion about what we've done.
Right. Well, and he also follows up asking if you've read Jason Aaron's Punisher Mask, Max, and do you like it? Which I think is a passive-aggressive way of suggesting that it's a better version, but that's my interpretation. So,
well, I think Jason's terrific. I love Jason. We're friends, and Jason's a great writer. But, you know, Jason has defended to a few people who have come to him and said that Jason loves Frankencastle. He loves Tony and I. We're all good friends. And so I've written straight up Punisher. If you want to see straight up Punisher, the first two arcs are straight up Punisher, dealing with the Marvel Universe. But all my rational brain can conclude as I'm writing it is that he lives in a world where he has to fight molten men. And the insanity of the Marvel Universe, it doesn't make any logical sense that it wouldn't rub off on this guy. It doesn't. It's stupid. Like, it doesn't fit my character. You know what fits your character? What happens to you? You don't get to choose what happens to you. My wife got in a car wreck and died. That doesn't fit my character. You live in the Marvel Universe, these things are going to happen. And I think that it's just the same as if the Spider-Man book had started off as the teenage adventures of Peter Parker, and we had had a lot of that, and we had seen what teenage Peter Parker lived like. And then one day some writer came in and had him get bitten by a radioactive spider. Right? So I've been reading the teenage adventures of Peter Parker for years and loved it. But this story where he gets bitten by the radioactive spider and turns into Spider-Man is ridiculous.
That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't fit the character. Yeah. It doesn't fit the character. It doesn't fit the character. You know what fits the character? Whatever happens to them, because you don't get to choose that shit.
Yeah.
I don't get to choose it.
Yep. All right. Okay, on to a lighter question. CJ Babcock wants to know, when is Remender's Earth Zero coming out? The preview image seemed really intriguing and awesome.
That is the thing that Tokini and I have been sort of bandying about and volleying around ideas on. I've got my story in mind for that. As for when or how we could get to it, it depends. We might be doing another American Crime arc at some point. I'm not entirely sure. And so it'll come out. I promise that we'll do it because we both really love the idea we've got.
Cool. And a related question, Ben Teaches Math on Twitter, who is one of your biggest fans here in San Francisco, by the way. He shops at my store. He's curious what your next creator-owned project will be, as Gigantic Fear Agent and Less Is American Crime will be finished soon. Smiley face.
smiley face.
Yeah.
I don't have one. Earth Zero is next up on the list. Whenever, I don't know when we'll get to it, but I'm going to dive into the Marvel pool, and I'm going to just do a ton of Marvel work. I've got a lot of fun opportunities there, and I you know, a lot of characters I'd like to. And again, I'm always just really drawn to the you know, the lower tier, trying to make them shine. Obviously, something like X-Force is A-list, and you can't turn that down because, you know, it's just incredibly fun and it's big and bright and you know. But there's so many characters I love in the Marvel Universe, and I was always, you know, especially being such a collector nerd and a retailer and all the time that I've spent immersed in these things, there's so many secondary characters and forgotten B-list guys that I'd like to get my hands on and try and polish up. And so, yeah, I probably no creator-owned work for me after these things wrap up for a little while. I'm just going to be doing Marvel stuff for a bit.
That's fair. Nothing wrong with that. Focus is good. So.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've done, at this point, like 30 or something graphic novels of creator-owned stuff. There's plenty out there.
And our last question is related to your most recent answer, which is, are there more plans for the N-League? And SBH27 had that question. So.
There's other media stuff in talks right now, but there are no plans for more comics. Again, that one hit the ending I had anticipated. It was a little shorter than I had liked it to be. I wanted to have it hit, you know, 12 issues, but I cut out some stuff that was originally going to be issue 10 and 11, and we did a double-sized issue 9. So I got to the end of the story as it was originally intended. I do have an idea for another story, but I don't know when I'd ever get to it.
Sure. Someday.
Someday.
Yeah, fair enough. So cool. Excellent. Well, thank you for answering everybody on Twitter's questions as well as answering my questions. I really appreciate it.
For sure.
And since we're talking of the Twitter, you are on Twitter at Remender if people want to follow you and get your little short bursts of inspiration and create
short bursts of inspiration or complaining about the rain or telling you what I ate or what I thought about stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
If you need another sentence or two thrown into your brain to ingest during the day.
And are you going to be in San Diego this year?
I am. We got some big stuff coming up in San Diego, so I will be there doing stuff for you know, to promote the Marvel stuff, and you know, I think that Sam Worthington and hopefully a couple other actors and director and myself will be doing some last day stuff, and I'll be there with Bulletstorm doing some panels about the video game. So yeah, I'll be all over San Diego.
You'll have a busy con. That's good. Well, so fans can hopefully check it, yeah, see you there and wait in line and get a signature, maybe even a sketch from the talented Rick Remender. So
or slap on the keister, a friendly little slap on the keister.
And we want to thank Rick for giving us some of his time to chat with us and to answer your questions. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to check out Fear Agent when it comes out this July in the final arc. It's going to be a lot of fun. And check out all his other books like Punisher and the upcoming X-Force and Last Days of American Crime. If you have any questions, you can shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com and go to ifanboy.com to check out all of our previous episodes as well as the other great writing and other comic discussion that's going on there. So until next time, enjoy your comics.
There's no set of rules. I'm not telling you what to do. All I'm saying is I'm bringing up three things that are, like, so important to the whole world. I don't have to find much importance in. Because of these things, whether they're fucking or whether it's playing golf. Because of that, I feel...
I gave up!